Good afternoon. Where I am right now, it is seven bells of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe in sort of a captain's chair, but in one of my favorite places in the entire world, and that is in the Florida Keys. And that's why it is seven bells of the afternoon watch, because I am in the Eastern time zone. I'm in the Florida Keys, and I'm broadcasting to you live, unscripted and unrehearsed, from the Veterans Memorial Park on Little Duck Key in the Florida Keys, about 42 nautical miles north of Key West, which is my ultimate destination for this afternoon. The reason that I'm here, of course, is that my Ingham is having her reunion, and every other reunion we have it in Key West in the ship herself. To give you a little flavor of the place where I am right now, I am sitting, the captain's chair is actually a picnic bench under a thatched roof canopy. And looking from the port quarter all the way to dead ahead to the starboard quarter, on the port quarter is actually the port beam, is the 7 Mile Bridge. And the 7 Mile Bridge runs parallel to the old railroad roadbed, which was constructed by Henry Flagler when the railroad was run from Miami to Key West, before there were any motor cars. And then when the railroad was stood down, the highway, the first highway, was built on top of much of the roadbed, and much of it is still there. You can see it as you drive along. And this is the southern end of Route 1. Route 1, of course, goes all the way from Maine down through the Middle Atlantic states and all the way to Key West. That is what I'm seeing on the port beam. And aha, my sharp lookout eyes have just detected two pretty girls and a black Labrador dog out in the water frolicking around. And with them is a not-so-pretty gentleman who is probably making sure that they don't get their hair messed up. Anyway, that's on the port beam, and then moving around dead ahead, I'm looking straight out into the Atlantic Ocean, and I'm looking straight out toward, but of course cannot see, the Gulf Stream. And over all of this water, all of this wonderful, beautiful green, blue salt water, are an absolutely stunning array of cumulus clouds. As I keep going to starboard, and now I'm headed toward the starboard beam, and I can see the flag, which is flying here at this lovely little Veterans Park. You get to it by taking a swing off of Route 1 and getting down and right next to the, right onto the beach. There are picnic tables here. I'm pretending that one of them is really the captain. Well, I'm not pretending. It is one of the captain's chairs. It is immaculately maintained, and there's a lot of bird life. And if I were to myself go out into the water, no doubt I would be able to find much marine life as well. It's a great tribute to our veterans, and in fact, the Florida Keys and Key West in particular are some of my favorite places. If I were going to live in Florida, this is where I would live, would be in the Keys and probably in Key West. The binnacle list today is a pretty good one because, first of all, there have been no crossings of the bar of anyone that I am concerned with. I am, of course, concerned with everybody who is on the captain's binnacle list, but we've had no crossings of the bar. in the last week since the last time. And my friend Guido, who has had such a serious bout with various complications, is now scheduled to perform in a musical event, which is coming up on the island very quickly. So I'm really happy about that. My own report is thus. Mr. Foley was extracted with some discomfort by the ever-lovely Vivian, and I went off to do the obligatory test run to see if I could produce yellow snow, and in fact, I was able to do that. So I am without the Foley, but it must be honestly reported that there is some leakage and soakage, and I'm learning how to deal with that. But it looks like maybe the Foley business may be over with. Oh, let it be true. The Ingham reunion is extremely important to me. When I went to Vietnam, I was her XO. I served Captain Neil Westfall. And that relationship was one that every crew, I believe, that every crew who would like to have that kind of relationship. I respected him as my captain. I loved him as a friend. And we worked really well together. The day that I became his XO was an interesting day, and it went something like this. I went up to the cabin and was expecting to be briefed on what his expectations were of me. And I have to remind all of Captain Joe's people that I only did one XO tour. By the time that Ingham and Captain Westfall got me as their XO, I'd already had two commands afloat. And so I knew the drill. And so, and I also knew my twin screw ship handling, and I knew how to handle a ship that had engine order telegraphs rather than bridge control. So I went up to the cabin and was expecting to have a long discussion as to what Captain Westfall expected from his XO, and the meeting lasted for about 5 minutes. And when I went up to the cabin, I said, "Captain, I have assumed custody of the keys. I have asked Commander Hayes, the man I was relieving, that he may leave the ship. I will organize a work detail to get his gear off the ship, and I am your XO." And he said, "All right, then the only thing that I want from you is to give me a clean ship that accomplishes all missions." "Aye, aye, Captain." That was my reply. "Aye, aye, Captain." Because that was indeed my own way of running ships as well. So we were in the shipyard, and it was the day to move the ship from the shipyard to the to her regular berth for just a few days before we got underway for Vietnam by way of Gitmo and a couple of other stops. And so I went up to the bridge expecting that the captain, because I was a brand new XO, he didn't know if I was any kind of a ship handler. I didn't tell him then that I was, in fact, I thought, the best ship handler in the Coast Guard. But we got to that point eventually. Anyway, and he's sitting up in the captain's chair, and I'm in the back of the bridge, and I'm waiting for something to happen. I'm waiting for the captain to assume the con, take the ship out, and get her over to her regular berth. And the captain's sitting in the chair, and he's starting to squirm around, and nothing is happening. And finally, he turned to me and he said, "XO, you better get her underway because I want to catch this tide and I want to be home for this evening." that told me that it was I, my first day, was going to handle the ship. Well, in fact, in the almost 2 years that I served Captain Westfall, he never handled the ship. Either I did or somebody that I was training. I don't know whether he was any good at it. I don't know whether he was so good at it that he didn't have to show anything. I never knew that. I never asked him. And I had plenty of opportunity because one of the things that he thought was one of my duties was to be ready to lay ashore to visit orphanages, cathedrals, and Christian Science reading rooms. And I always, Exo's Day is never done. And whenever we would touch a port, which was not very often, the mail load from all of the commands that we served was daunting. It overflowed out of the ship's office and out into the passageway. And I just had so much work to do to take care of his crew. And so I said, well, Captain, I have so much work piled up here. We've been underway now for 4 months, and I've just got so much work piled up, and I really respectfully ask that somebody else go ashore with you. And he said, well, XO, if you had everything organized properly, then you'd have it all sorted out by now, and we could go ashore together. Well, I finally prevailed on him, at least for the first day whenever we were in port, to have somebody else, usually the chief engineer, Earl D. Johnson from Harkers Island, North Carolina, where they still speak an old English version of old English. When Earl would have a couple of drinks, he would slide into that dialect and I'd have to interpret for him. Because I can interpret it. I can't speak it myself, but I can interpret it because I come from that part of the world as well. So anyway, my relationship with Captain Westfall was the kind that he never interfered in the way that I ran the Liberty for the crew whenever we had the opportunity to let the crew have a run ashore. He never interfered in that, and I gave him exactly what he had told me he wanted and needed from his XO, a clean ship and one that accomplished all of her missions. She came back with, among other things, 2 presidential unit citations, and it was just a great relationship. Well, Neil is gone. His ashes are now interred in the little chapel in Ingham. And we're going to recognize one of my tasks as her senior living captain, because I fleeted up and became her captain when we came back. That was one of the things that Neil wanted. He wanted me to relieve him. And so the record of the ship was so sterling that no admiral that to whom Neil reported was going to tell him he couldn't have what he wanted in that regard, and so I pleaded up and became his relief. And so I am now her senior living captain, and one of my tasks is to read the names of all of our shipmates who have crossed the bar since the last time that we got together 2 years ago in Portsmouth, Virginia. And the reason for Portsmouth is that that is where her home port was when we deployed. I had a very unexpected but wonderful contact, which I'm going to expand on next week. The Coast Guard cutter Burton Island, a sister to my Northwind, is having a reunion in Reno. Now, one could say, Captain Joe, why are icebreaker people mustering in Reno? And I'm not quite clear as to exactly the reason for that, but that's where they're gathering. They're gathering in Reno. Now, I did not command Burton Island myself, but I worked with her in one of the deep freezes going into McMurdo, and her captain at the time, Jim Fournier, was and is a good friend. And so I sent a signal to the organizers and said, Would it be agreeable to you if I came down and be a part of the celebration, even though I did not sail in Burton Island? But I was, in my Twilight tour, the ice boss for Admiral Gracie, for the commandant, and I would have been, so Burton Island would have been one of my ships. And I got the most wonderful reply from the organizers. His first name is Doug. And Doug said, by all means, we would love to have you. And then some aspects of my treatment plan changed, and I have some commitments connected with that during their reunion. And so I just sent a signal and said, after all, I'm not able to come down. But Doug sent me a wonderful piece that he wrote about a friend of his from another service who had saved his life. And I'm going to read that whole thing next week, but I am mentioning here that as much as I would like to be at the Burton Island and have as much of a welcome as I know that I would get, that now it looks like I am not going to be able to do it. There was an all coast today that I was looking at my traffic sitting here in the sort of captain's chair in the Veterans Memorial Park on Little Duck Key in the Florida Keys. And I was going through my traffic and there was an all coast. That is, you will recall, a message sent out to all Coast Guard people, and I'm on the distribution list for all coasts, and this one is number 408. The title of it is Restoring Non-Judicial Punishment to Being a Disciplinary Tool. Now, Commandant, Acting Commandant, I have to tell you that I did not realize that the Article 15 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, also called Non-Judicial Punishment. In the Coast Guard, it's called the MAST. I never realized that we had lost that. Where did all of these things happen while I was in retirement? So I read the All Coast, and I read it with both dismay and disgruntlement and some discord in my heart. Because if, in fact, the things which are being restored or which are being proclaimed to be restored in this All Coast have, in fact, been restored and they were lost before, they were certainly not lost in any one of my commands. The reason that it's called the MAST is that disciplinary proceedings and sailing ship days were always held at the base of the mainmast. And we carry that tradition forward today, certainly in the Coast Guard, at least in my ships, and I would certainly hope in the Navy. In the Air Force and in the Army, I think it's called Article 15, coming from that article in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 15, Non-Judicial Punishment, which only a commanding officer can award. So the way that I worked it in all of my ships was, first of all, I depended on my XO, my department heads, officers, and chief petty officers met to manage up. A helicopter of some authority just passed over, sending us greetings to all the shipmates in the Coast Guard cutter Hingham. So, in any case, I depended on all of those people to exercise moral suasion and reserved unto myself. There's no such thing as echoes mask. Reserved unto myself any actual punishment that might be awarded for different offenses. And those offenses are laid out in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, those offenses, as, for example, AWOL, one of the most popular ones. didn't happen very often in my ship. My people never wanted to miss a sailing. They never wanted to not be there to see, well, boy, what's the old man going to do next? Where is he going to take us? What adventures are we going to have? In any case, the way that I always worked it was, first of all, I got suited up in full dress canvas, not with swords and large medals, but service dress, blouse, tie, ribbons, badges, everything. I always stood, and I always stood behind a lectern, and sitting on that lectern was prominently displayed a copy of the manual for courts martial, which is always in a maroon binder. And I'm sitting on the lectern as I would pontificate at great length, and I was told, Master at Arms, that when somebody was brought before me, that they should be told they should go to the head, because they were going to be standing at attention before me for a very long time. And when I heard the story, each person who had committed an offense that was standing before me, standing at attention and listening to me list the catalog of his sins and offenses and omissions, I expected each person before me to bring with him someone who would attest to his good character, and that possibly this offense was a big mistake. I had to do this so seldom. And one of the reasons that I had to do it so seldom was that there were very, very few people who, having once been to one of my masks, never wanted to come back again. And you could see that they would be shifting from a little bit at attention, but a little bit from one foot to the other as the catalog of their offenses got higher and higher. And my discussion of these offenses got longer and longer. It was great military theater, but it had a wonderful effect, and that effect was that having been before me once, very few people ever wanted to stand before me again. And the chiefs who would come and speak on behalf of their man also were in full dress canvas and also standing at attention. And I knew that after the ceremony was over and whatever punishment I had decided to award was awarded, that chief had a come-to-the-chief talk with his young sailor. I hated to hold the mast. I just hated it. But once I got into full flight, then it was as if I was born, meant to exert discipline over my crew that way. What I found over the years that was the most effective was a facial expression, a low growl coming from the captain's chair that something was going a little bit awry or amiss. Or after I would come aboard in the morning and see either an Irish pennant, an unwhipped line, or a little streak of running rust that had not been caught by the first lieutenant. Nobody wanted to have a come to the cabin and a little talk with the captain about that. And so for these reasons, the whole business of discipline in any of my ships was one of moral suasion and What would the captain want? For all of this, I am enormously grateful to the thousands of young sailors that I was privileged to command, and most of whom came to agree and came to believe that the way that Captain Joe's people took care of each other as shipmates, took care of the ship that took care of them, and accomplished all of the missions that we were given, including some really bad ones. Bad in the sense that they were difficult, they were dangerous, and they, at least primarily, did not have a very high chance of success. So all of you out there who are on this channel with me, all of you who are Captain Joe's people, all of you who sail with me, know how grateful I am for all that we did together. A couple of pieces of nautical update. The Dutch seem to be having some trouble keeping their ships going. Right now, there is one adrift and ablaze in the Gulf of Aden. She was hit. We don't yet know who. And, of course, this is not her captain's and crew's fault when this kind of thing happens. What may be looked at is how well do they manage the damage control to... That'll be looked at by the people who do the investigation. An investigation there certainly will be. The other Dutch ship is the one that is still aground up in the Northwest Passage. And the update on that is that they are working close to her to lighten her so that she can come up off of the pinnacle vertically rather than laterally. We talked a little bit last week and the week before about the reason for that. And so it is my hope that this week they will be able to finish that. So far, this is in Franklin Strait, named for Sir John Franklin, who was lost with his HMS Erebus and HMS Terror. The names of those ships, parenthetical insertion here, the names of those ships have been translated to the mountains, which are right next to McMurdo Station. My first view of Antarctica was of Mount Erebus, which is a living, working volcano, and there was steam coming up out of the peak the first time I saw her. So Sir John was lost. His two ships, the fragments of them have now been found many, many years later. And so the Dutch ship is still aground in that pinnacle, which is not an uncharted pinnacle. That one is one of the mysteries, and for that am I looking forward to the investigation on that. The last thing that I am going to mention for today is that the mine forces have always been in the Navy the bottom of the professional pile, and I've never understood this because the sweeping and destroying of mines requires the highest level of seamanship and skill. The Navy has just decommissioned USS Gladiator. Her hull number is MCM-11. She's the last of that particular class of nine countermeasure ships. And mines can do tremendous damage, and they can blockade a whole port. They can blockade a whole country, or the approaches to a whole country. The Germans did it in World War One. And there have been minefields laid all over the place, even today, still coming up and causing damage. So I do not understand why this particular ship has been decommissioned, and I'm going to be following that. And if I come up with any more on that, I will report it here on. I've come to the end of my time with you. This is a particularly bittersweet report. And my one next week, I will be back on the magical Isle of Vashon for a while. I have several medical madness appointments to see how we can improve the progress that I'm making. And despite reluctance to be too expansive on that, I keep getting signals from many of you wanting to know, at least, is it time for us to start practicing the flag folding ceremony? And the answer to that is no, it is not. I still can get up in the chair unassisted. So this is your Captain Joe. We never say goodbye. We always say until we meet again.